The Daikin Comfort Pros at Legacy Heating and Air are saving you thousands on select Daikin heating systems. Upgrade to a Daikin high-efficiency heating system from Legacy today and spend the season warm and worry-free. Get thousands in rebates and federal tax incentives and enjoy flexible financing to suit your budget. Daikin systems deliver unbeatable comfort, cleaner, safer indoor air, and energy savings. Visit LegacyHeatingAndAirInc.com to view exclusive offers and get qualified now.
A Cook Family Business.
Welcome to Football Never Sleeps, the aspiring to be viral Notre Dame football show, which probably should be about 5 hours tonight. We're going to try to cram it all into 1 hour plus. My name is Eric Hansen. The guy in the other box is Tyler James. Charleston Bowles has recovered from flu somewhere on this planet and is working on our signing day coverage for Wednesday. And we're going to start right out by ignoring the Sun Bowl and going straight to the news of the day, which is leading with Jerod Parker, Notre Dame's offensive coordinator, leaving Notre Dame to be the head coach at Troy. Now that we've got that out there, I'm going to let Tyler give you the particulars in case you want to ask us questions during the show, which you can. We'll try to work them into our conversations. And all the other things, the likes, the bells, all that stuff. I don't know how to do that. He does.
Yeah, well, the thumbs up button is the like. The bell button gets you notifications. Make sure you subscribe to us here on the channel. Make sure you check us out over at InsideNDSports.com if you aren't familiar with what we do 24/7, other than over spend some time over here on YouTube. And if you want to ask us questions in tonight's show, make sure you click through to YouTube either on a desktop or a mobile version or an app. But make sure you're not like trying to talk to us through somewhere embedded. Like if you just hit play on Twitter, you're not going to be able to get into the comment section. So make sure you've clicked through and if you're on a desktop version of some sort, the chat box should be to the right-hand side. If you're on a mobile version, you should have the chat box below our talking heads. I want to apologize. I'm a bit under the weather myself. So I know I don't sound great. I apologize. I'm probably muting and coughing and hopefully muting before coughing blowing my nose at times. But we'll get through this together. There's too much to talk about to not push forward beyond asking questions. We also hope you consider taking advantage of our 30-day free trial of InsideNDSports.com. You can use promo code NDYT, which is exclusive to our YouTube audience, when you sign up to get free access to our premium analysis and recruiting coverage. And special access to us over on the Insider Lounge, where we have plenty of discussion about Notre Dame's offensive coordinator search, and that's where we will share our information first. There's a link to sign up for that in the video description below, and I'll send it back over to Eric.
Okay, and I am not under the weather, but my housekeeping may be, so if there's anything in the background that looks a mess, I have not touched anything tonight, and I don't have my grandkids to blame for it, but I do have Jerod Parker to blame, and the reason is Notre Dame will have a new offensive coordinator here soon. Jerod Parker, who was offensive coordinator for one season, tight ends coach for two seasons at Notre Dame, has been named the head coach at Troy, and so there is a vacancy. Some details about this, we'll talk more. I'll question Tyler. Some things that I'm going to talk about right off the top. I think if you're going to have this change happen, this is the perfect time for it to happen. You say, wow, signing day is coming up in less than 48 hours. Won't this be a problem? We'll get into that. And I don't think it will be, but this is much preferred to the February transition when Tommy Reese left for Alabama in February and then Marcus Freeman had to do the search in February, hiring from within Jerod Parker. I am happy for Jerod. I liked him as a person. I did not think he was the best fit to be offensive coordinator at this stage of his career, and I wish him the best, but I do think Marcus has it. Incredibly huge opportunity here to get this right and to get somebody elite into this this position. Part of the reason I bypassed their Tyler was just to give him a chance to breathe for a second. So let's get into the mechanics of this first of all. So Tyler, did any part of this surprise you that Jarrod Parker left for a head coaching job?
Yes. I mean, there was only one head coaching job available at the FBS level, and I didn't necessarily know for sure that this is where Jarrod Parker was going to be end up. Obviously, it seems like this has been in the works for a few days now, but before that, this was not something that I was anticipating. I think it's a little surprising from that aspect. I think it's encouraging from our point of view because we both thought like that Notre Dame could potentially do better at offensive coordinator. And as it relates to the timing, now isn't terrible. I think 2 weeks ago would have been better rather than right now. But I think the timing in terms of like not having to do it in February certainly is much preferred in terms of when you can do this. I think the way that Notre Dame has like gone about its recruiting, I don't think that anyone was coming to Notre Dame for Jarrod Parker above all else. And so that should help them come the signing period. It certainly opens a window of opportunity for teams to come at those guys and say, hey, you sure you really want to do this? They're looking for another offensive coordinator once again. But I think a lot of people have bought into Marcus Freeman and what he's doing, right, position coaches as well. I did not expect this to happen. I think you and I were both open to the idea that maybe Jarrod Parker wouldn't be back next season. That even though Marcus Freeman talked about how he wanted everyone back, if it was up to him, and then Chancey Stuckey got fired, that we believe that the door was still open for changes to still happen if Marcus Freeman felt so compelled, or if coaches left, obviously. And so the opening creates this opportunity, but I didn't necessarily anticipating it happening in this way. We're left to figure out who's up next to replace him.
Right. And we're going to get to that in just a little bit. A couple of things here. I think, again, the reason why recruiting wasn't as tied to Jarrod Parker as it would be maybe a different offensive coordinator, a couple things. One, I don't think that recruits and transfer portal guys really knew necessarily what a Jarrod Parker offense was. There was only really 1 year of it. He had, you know, a little time having that title at West Virginia, but it really wasn't his offense per se. The other thing, Marcus, I said this at the time when he became the head coach and had his first national signing day a couple of years ago. He said, I'm going to be the lead recruiter for every recruit. And I can't tell you how many times that's come in to be a good strategy. So I think that's really good. Yeah, I'm not sure. Marcus had really supported publicly Jarrod Parker, but I had not ruled out Jarrod Parker not being here next year for whatever reason. It is very reminiscent to me of the Charlie Molnar situation. Hopefully Jared's head coaching career will go better than Charlie Molnar. Charlie was the offensive coordinator Brian Kelly's first couple of years at Notre Dame. He had been the wide receivers coach at Cincinnati. Jeff Quinn was the offensive coordinator. And Jeff initially went to Buffalo to be their head coach. And I know that Brian wasn't super enamored with Charlie Molnar in his first 2 years. And I think was making that evaluation. And then Charlie got the UMass job and kind of surprised everybody and was only there 2 years, won 2 games in 2 years. But I think Jarrod Parker has a lot of leadership qualities that would help him be a head coach that didn't necessarily help him in the role of offensive coordinator at Notre Dame.
Let me throw this question in here real quick, Eric, because I know we have the answer to it and we get to it eventually, but I want to get Jim his answer. Who do you think will handle the OC duties in the Sun Bowl?
So it's going to be Gino Gadulli to do the play calling in the Sun Bowl, and then K Caleb Carmine. Did I butcher
Carbine with a B.
Carbine. Yeah. See, it sounds like you have just a cold and it's Carmine, but it's Carbine. anyways, if you had said it, people would have thought you just had a bad cold, which you do. He is going to coach the tight ends during the bowl game. So those will be the reassignments. Before we get into who the next coordinator should or could be, and I think we have a pretty good idea what it's not going to be. Tyler, do you think anybody internally should at least get an interview or be seriously considered for this job?
Not first. I think maybe you do that, especially if you feel like guys are on their way out or like want to have that opportunity to sort of almost like a practice one, right? Like I want to get an opportunity to interview as an offensive coordinator. And so maybe you give that opportunity to Gino Gadulli or Dylan McCullough, but I don't think those guys should be at or near the top of the list in terms of what Notre Dame should do moving forward. I think the search needs to be external first, finding who the best guys are. And I think when Marcus Freeman was evaluating that whether or not Jared Parker should return for next season, I think he had to be considering who could he go out and get to replace him as a part of that equation. I don't think it's just about Jared Parker and what he did. I think you always have to know what is out there and what you could do. One of Marcus Freeman's mottos is challenge everything. And I think part of challenging everything is knowing what else could be out there for you. And so I think now we're in position for Marcus Freeman to start figuring out what those options are and how realistic they are in terms of coming to Notre Dame. What do you think, Eric? You agree with me?
Yeah, I think going internally would be a mistake. I think you're over-relying on continuity. And I think you could make a case for it last February because spring football was almost on top of you. Jared Parker knew the Tommy Rees offense, so there were some built-in advantages, even though there were some disadvantages with hiring somebody so inexperienced at calling plays, but at least he had those things going for him. You hire somebody in December or early January, and you've got a lot of time to put in a new offense, get everybody used to it, and really do a pretty exhaustive search. I do think that Marcus has pretty much in mind, I think he saw this coming once it started to gain traction, and he's in sources I've talked to today, he really has done his due diligence and outside the normal circles that you would think that Marcus would be talking to. He's really done a really good job with figuring out what he wants to do with this. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be a mistake. I think there's some really good coaches on this staff, a couple with some coordinator experience. But again, I can't say with confidence that Joe Rudolph or Gino Gadulli or Dylan McCullough would be a top 10 to 12 offensive coordinator, which I think Notre Dame needs to aim for. I mean, ideally top five, but not everybody that's in the top five necessarily is looking for a job, could be lured away from their job or as a fit philosophically. I know we've on our Insider Lounge message board, there's some people that have thrown out some names of kind of air raid disciples. And unless they can adapt that to what Notre Dame likes to do offensively, I don't think that that would be a fit, for example. And yet I think having that in your background is a good thing. Jared actually had some air raid time. He spent some time with coaches that were air raid kind of guys. But if you're going to play tight ends, if you're going to have a balanced attack and not play fast tempo all the time, I'm not sure that's the direction you want to go. So do we want to take any questions or do we want to kind of launch into some of the things that we think who and what Notre Dame should be looking for in the
offense? Yeah, I think let me get one question in here first before we talk about names. From Richard Bond, do you think Riley Leonard knew what he was leaving, he being Jared Parker, when he committed?
I do. I think that there was enough traction at the point that he made his public announcement.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Okay.
I don't know that there was any guarantees like, hey, Jared Parker will be your offensive coordinator next season, but I know for sure, like Jamal Banks, who Notre Dame was recruiting out of the portal from Wake Forest, Jared Parker was a part of that recruiting visit. He said that Jared Parker is one of the people he connected most with during that visit. That happened Friday and Saturday. Riley Leonard committed to Notre Dame before that. And so Jared Parker was still involved with things. And so I it would be a bit surprised. Like maybe Riley Leonard probably knew before it was announced today, but I don't know that what Riley Leonard really committed.
I probably didn't answer that well the way you're talking. Did he know Parker was leaving? No. What I think I was trying to say was this a possibility when Riley Leonard committed? Not was this a done deal when Riley Leonard committed?
Right. Okay.
That's what I was trying to say.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That he wasn't being sold that Parker is your offensive coordinator. They would not have, and I don't think this is going to affect his commitment.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Gino Gadulli is probably a bigger piece of the development pitch for Riley Leonard than Jared Parker was.
Which takes us to who and what should be considered here. What meaning a human being? No, but what I mean is positional match. Now there are a lot of really good offensive coordinators that have only coached quarterbacks and would only consider coaching quarterbacks. And I do think that Marcus would love to have a positional match where Gino Gadulli remains the quarterbacks coach, because I think he's been a big part of what they've done in the last year. I think he's a big part of recruiting, the sale on recruiting to Deuce Knight, to CJ Carr, to keep CJ Carr committed when there was the changeover with Tommy Rees. I think Gino Gadulli's done a good job. And I think ideally you want somebody that could move to another position or that already is at another position, ideally. So in that light, do we want to talk about some profiles that we find interesting?
Yeah, and I thought we could use Joe Peters' question as part of a jumping off point. Who and where will they look first, college or the NFL? At least from my perspective, I don't know that the NFL is where Notre Dame is looking. I haven't heard of a name that makes the most sense to me. I know on the Insider Lounge, people keep saying Frank Reich, and I don't know if that seems very realistic to me. He's had a bad track record as of late. Him jumping into college football seems a bit like an odd fit to me. I wouldn't anticipate that to be where Notre Dame is looking first. I think we're probably talking about college options. I know that's what Eric and I have been discussing all day today so far.
So when's the end of the NFL season, Tyler, since you follow it and you know that the Bears aren't going to be in the playoffs? Although it seems like a 7-9 or 7-10 team could get in.
There are 3 weeks left of the regular season.
Okay. So again, then you would have to wait on somebody, and if it's a playoff team, you'd have to wait even longer.
Right.
The Colts conceivably
February.
And so Frank Reich's team would be in the playoff hunt, correct?
No. Yeah, that shows how much you don't follow the NFL. Frank Reich was the head coach for the Panthers and has been fired, so he is currently unemployed. Okay. So he would be available.
So why is that even an option then? Why is that somebody that people like, I guess, or suggest?
I mean, his claim to fame was the offensive coordinator for the Eagles. When the Eagles made a run, and that launched him to becoming the head coach for the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts offense didn't necessarily meet expectations. They had all like a roller coaster of head coaches, or not head coaches, quarterbacks, where they kept bringing in old veterans and kept getting hurt after Andrew Luck retired. And so his Frank Reich's big claim to fame is that the Eagles won the Super Bowl by elevating Nick Foles after Carson Wentz got hurt. with Frank Reich as the offensive coordinator. So that's the big thing on his resume.
Okay.
Because that was the 2017 season. We're talking quite a time ago in terms of his exemplary success. They weren't bad when he was the head coach of the Colts. Like, they made the playoffs a couple years, but this year certainly was a failure. And he was the head coach for less than one full season for the Panthers when they drafted Bryce Young, number one overall.
I wish I had a cold where I could say, you know what, it was the congestion that made me not know where Frank Reich was this season. But I will say this, I do not follow the NFL as closely, but I don't think it makes any sense. Somebody that has NFL on their resume would be interesting. And Liam Cohen at Kentucky has that. Although, again, as I look at Liam's college resume, I don't get super excited about it. Kentucky was okay on offense this year. They were very average. I know that he was with the Rams as an offensive coordinator for a year. He was with Kentucky before that. He's gone kind of back and forth between the Rams and the Kentucky a couple times. I think there's plenty of really good candidates in college that make a lot of sense and that are positional fits, and that would be, if not a home run hire, certainly a triple that the guy took home on an error. So the one that I want to throw out there and talk about a little bit is Mike Denbrock at LSU. And I do not know, I could not say with certainty whether Marcus offering a job to Denbrock that he would take it. And I'm not saying that it has been offered, but I do think it makes sense on a bunch of levels. And I'm going to go through those quickly. One is, he loves Notre Dame and he's been at Notre Dame twice. He has also worked with Gino Gadulli. He's worked with Mike Brown, the new wide receivers coach. He's worked with Marcus Freeman. I know Marcus and Mike text about once a week during the season. And then he's obviously worked with Mike Meckins. Other than knowing what Mike likes for lunch when he's the guy that has to go out and get it, I don't know that that factors in. He's ahead of the number one offense in the country right now. They were 28th last year in Mike's first year at LSU under Brian Kelly. They were 80-something, I want to say 88 in total offense in the year before Mike Denbrock and Brian Kelly came to LSU. I think he did a really good job in his 3 years at Notre Dame, and I have the statistics to back it up. I think where his light didn't shine as brightly was because during his 3 years as offensive coordinator, play caller, Brian McGorder was the defensive coordinator, so there was no margin for error with that offense. They pretty much had to outscore people in every game, and often that they did. I think if you had any of the last three or four defensive coordinators for Notre Dame during the Denbrock time, his light would have shined a lot brighter. They would have made the playoff in 2015, I'm convinced. But I think that's the perfect profile. He has coached every position on offense except for running back. Right now he is a tight ends coach, so it's a perfect positional fit. He's been a defensive coordinator before. He knows Notre Dame. The thing is, he just turned down a boatload of money to go to Texas A&M and be its offensive coordinator to stay at LSU. I do not know whether he has signed that new contract yet. I do believe it'll, until somebody else gets a raise, it'll make him the highest paid offensive coordinator in the country. So he won't come cheap to Notre Dame. I think.
Yeah. Let me chime in here quick on that contract, the extension. It was reported on December 6th by Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports that they were finalizing a 3-year extension, but I have seen nothing to indicate that that has been signed or like the terms of the agreement. And LSU is a public school, so once that is signed, that information should get out in terms of the monetary figures. So I think the fact that hasn't come out there makes me wonder if it hasn't been signed yet.
So right. Another name that we both find interesting is Kirby Moore. I mean, I butchered that. What's his first name?
No, you got it right.
Okay, Kirby Moore. It's Kellen Moore's younger brother. Kellen is an offensive coordinator in the NFL right now, but he was a quarterback at Boise State, and his younger brother, Kirby, was a wide receiver at Boise. He is right now the offensive coordinator at Missouri. He's only been there a year. He's only been an offensive coordinator a couple years. He was at Fresno before he was at Missouri. Missouri's offense went from, again, a big jump from like being around 88, 90, somewhere in there, to in the 20s, maybe 21 in total offense in 1 year with the same quarterback. So that shows you how quickly he can impact an offense. And what I liked about his time at Fresno State before he was the offensive coordinator there, he was the passing game coordinator. And Kalen DeBoer was the head coach then. And Ryan Grubb, who I think is the best offensive coordinator in the country, was the offensive coordinator. So he's got some good association with two very good offensive minds from the time that he was at Fresno. So that's another one. Could he coach tight ends? Yes. I mean, Jared Parker was primarily a wide receivers coach that became a tight ends coach at Notre Dame. He is currently, Kirby is, a quarterback's coach at Missouri, but he has wide receiver coaching experience. He's been a wide receiver himself. So I think that would be a positional fit. So those are two of the names that we like among many that have been thrown out there.
Did you touch on the contract situation with Kirby Moore?
I did not. Would you like me to?
No, I got it. I can do that.
I'm trying to save you as much on your
No, I appreciate that. I just want to make sure I didn't miss it while I was blowing my nose and making a scene. Okay. So our understanding is that Kirby Moore was making $850,000 this past season, but that was he's due for an extension and raise. But to our understanding, he has not signed the extension slash raise that has been extended to him quite yet either. So that would be attractive in avoiding a bigger buyout. Once those guys sign those contracts right away, usually the buyout raises. So that could make it maybe more financially feasible to pull him away from Missouri than it would be to pull Mike Denbrock away from LSU. It's kind of, from my perspective, it seems sort of interesting. Like Denbrock seems sort of like the Andy Ludwig of last year's search, whereas Kirby Moore seems more like the Colin Klein of last year's search. Now, Klein was at his alma mater, so I think it was going to be harder to pull him away. But Kirby Moore, I think, isn't necessarily as tied down to Missouri, although the success there and the guys they have coming back next season could lead him to want to stay there. But I think in terms of a resume builder, being the Notre Dame offensive coordinator would certainly be a jump up, at least from my perspective. I know that maybe some people in Columbia, Missouri might disagree with that. I think that would be an attractive possibility as well.
Right. Somebody we liked that profiled very well, we don't think is involved, is Buster Faulkner at Georgia Tech. He was a first-year offensive coordinator at Georgia Tech. Again, huge improvement in the 1 year that he was there. He was 3 years on Georgia's offensive staff. He was not the offensive coordinator during that time. Before that, he was an offensive coordinator for 10 years at several group of five schools. So he's got some extensive offensive coordinator experience. But what we're hearing is that family considerations, he does not want to leave Georgia at this time. Not that, again, that the job was offered to him or anything, that we're just vetting what the likelihood somebody like that could get involved. But positional fit, a tight ends coach who happens to be an offensive coordinator and a guy that seems to project as somebody that could really do a good job. But those are some of the names that we thought we would discuss with you.
Yeah, I know this was a name thrown around on the message board and you responded to it there, so I want to give you a chance to do it here. Roosevelt Carney says Dino Babers for OC.
Again, I think there was a time where Dino was really one of the hottest names in offensive football, but you know, the game evolves in the last 5 years. Syracuse hasn't had an offense ranked higher than 71st. And so what's gone on that they've been consistently that bad? They were in the 80s this year. And he got fired. He hasn't been a coordinator actually ever. He was a position coach who became a head coach, who certainly was involved in the offense as a position coach. He's out of the air raid school of thinking, although Syracuse's offense didn't really project to that, at least not in recent years. So I don't know what, as much as I think Dino would be fun to have around, I don't know that projects well. I think that's a big risk.
What do you think, Eric? I know we talked sort of the contract complications or lack thereof as it relates to Denbrock and Moore. What do you think about what Notre Dame should be willing to do in terms of paying for the next offensive coordinator?
I think given what happened in the last offensive coordinator search, I would be, if you can get somebody that's going to commit to you for multiple years and that you feel is going to be at Notre Dame for 2 or 3 years and do a great job, I think you really need to consider being at the high end of what offensive coordinators are getting paid in college from a perceptual standpoint and from a reality standpoint. And you see what might and could happen if you don't make that kind of investment. It'll cost you money. The difference between playing in a off-Broadway bowl, and I love the Sun Bowl, but in terms of money, it's nothing close to what you get for playing in a playoff game. And the 12-team playoff is next year. And I think if you look at this season, one of the reasons Notre Dame didn't get into the playoff or was not a playoff contender was how it performed on offense in its losses. And so you need an offensive coordinator that can stand up to that. I know in 2015, for example, Brett Venables was Clemson's defensive coordinator. And Mike Denbrock went toe-to-toe with him in that game with DeShone Kizer, who wasn't even the starting quarterback at the start of the year. And they went into against a Clemson defense that had all kinds of pros in its whole defense and came within a failed two-point conversion of sending that game into overtime. And he did a great job during the game of being able to adjust his game plan, saying, okay, they are shutting down our traditional running game, so I'm going to throw the ball to C.J. Procise on the perimeter. I'm going to run Kizer a lot. And the thing is, he's got a lot of experience with running an offense with a dual-threat quarterback. And Notre Dame largely projects that. Angeli, not so much. Kenny Minchie, yes. Deuce Knight, yes. Riley Leonard, yes. C.J. Carr, probably a little bit more dual threat than we're giving him credit for. So I think this would be a very good fit from that standpoint. And I also think when you're talking about NFL versus NCAA, if you're going to have dual threat quarterbacks, a college guy seems to be likely more in tune with that skill set. Right.
Okay. Any other offensive coordinator topics we want to touch on before moving on to some other stuff? If you can believe that,
I think we will move on to some other stuff, and we can always circle back if there's some great questions. We're going to move on to Lauren Landau, who is expected to be Notre Dame's next strength and conditioning quarterback coordinator, which I try to put a B in that word. So Tyler, you did some of the legwork on this yesterday. What do you feel like makes him a good hire from what you know of him and weren't able to further research on him today while we were chasing offensive coordinator stuff?
Yeah, I think he has like a wide array of experience in terms of training different athletes. I think that is interesting. Certainly leading the Denver Broncos strength and conditioning program for 5 seasons is meaningful. That is different than leading a college football strength and conditioning program. So I think that will be a bit of a learning curve. But I do think just sort of you look at his resume in terms of guys he's worked with, it's like, well, he helped Christian McCaffrey and prepare for the NFL Combine and has worked with McCaffrey for a long time. I think McCaffrey has worked out pretty well. He's an all-pro running back. He's worked with the likes of Von Miller, Peyton Manning, Austin Eckler, the Chargers running back. He helped him prepare for the Combine. Jaguars linebacker Foyisade Oluwakun. I'm not sure that I'm saying that right. But he's been one of the NFL's leading tacklers the last couple of seasons. So a lot of different guys that he's worked with at different positions. So I think it's not like he's like only a guy that is a great running back trainer or something like that. The connection that was most interesting to me, and then it came out today, Brady Quinn spoke to it on the record with Nine News out of Denver, was that he was one of the people that helped connect Notre Dame to Landau because Brady Quinn had some experience working with him. He said that they first became close during the 2011 NFL lockout, and Landau helped lead some voluntary workouts with Quinn, with Brady Quinn and Brian Dawkins. Landau had even worked with Brady Quinn's now wife, Alicia, formerly Sacramone, the U.S. gymnast Olympian, who was very decorated herself. So I think that connection is unique and maybe allowed Notre Dame to jump into a different sort of pool for a strength coach than you would have necessarily associated with what Notre Dame was looking for. So I think there's intriguing things on his resume, but it's also just the unproven fact that he hasn't been at the college level before leading a strength program. So how does he adapt to the differences between leading an NFL program and leading a college program?
Right. And something that I'm not sure that anybody can answer necessarily, except for Marcus at this point, is how does he fit into shaping the culture of a college team? You know, that was something Matt Bayless had a whole presentation about. He would give this at his clinics about creating a culture in college sports. And in the Brian Kelly reboot post 2016, he was a central figure in that as anything else from the standpoint of setting the culture, coming up with the accountability teams, which they called SWAT teams, leadership structure, all the time the strength coach ends up spending with the players. So that's kind of the piece that's going to be really interesting in getting to the bottom of how that fits. Now, I think maybe Marcus thinks the culture is set at this point and he can kind of follow that template, but I think it is interesting. It sounds like certainly from you look at some of the other people Notre Dame was looking at as well, you know, sports science being on the leading edge of that seems to be a huge priority. And Lauren seems to fit that bill, but as this becomes official, we'll get a chance to ask those questions and get more information about it. So from there, we go to Mike Brown, who is shuffled a little bit. He's old news now that he's on board. He had a press conference on Saturday, and we got a chance to ask him some questions. Marcus Freeman spoke of him, and he is already on board coaching the wide receivers in the bowl game. And Tyler, you ended up posting the transcript. We have a transcript of the entire interview on our website at Insight and InsideNDSports.com. I almost changed it to Insight, but it's InsideNDSports.com.
Where we provide lots of good insight.
Right. So that's our nickname is Insight ND Sports. But Tyler, what was your maybe top couple takeaways from what you heard from Mike Brown?
Yeah, I think there were a lot of different things that were interesting. I think in terms of he was asked about what sort of credit or share did he have in helping three guys that were three-star recruits develop into NFL draft picks. And he talked about how that he likes to praise fundamentals and effort. Like those are the two things that he wants to make the biggest impact in with his wide receivers. And those were guys that didn't necessarily have a lot of wide receiver experience at the high school level, but were good athletes that turned into very good college receivers. And then now are working on becoming very good NFL receivers. So I thought that was interesting. He sort of talked about what sort of numbers he would like to have based on his experience and what he's had elsewhere. It seemed 10 is what they're like projected at without any changes. 11, I think, would be more ideal and something maybe he's a little bit more used to. But I think it's certainly he talked about it depends on the offense you're running. If you need to have three guys out there at the same time always, then you got to at least have six ready to go to play on a weekly basis. And certainly you want to have more guys waiting in the wings and ready to go beyond that. So then the other thing that I liked about what he said was just the way that or the reason that he was willing to leave Luke Fickell at Wisconsin, who he gave him his first bigger shot at being a position coach at Cincinnati, was because Marcus Freeman was the one who called him. He said he was probably the one person in the entire country that could have picked up the phone and called me, and I would have at the very least been interested in, and that was Coach Freeman. So he spoke very highly about the experience he had watching Marcus Freeman as Cincinnati's defensive coordinator, how he carried himself, how he handled the defense, the energy that he brought to the job, and those kinds of things. So I think that speaks to what Marcus Freeman is able to do in terms of attracting coaches to him, especially guys that have some experience with him and know him professionally.
Right. You know, some of the things that we asked him too, especially me, was kind of the mechanics of the bowl game. You know, I think his thing is just don't mess it up right now. Don't try to reinvent anything right now. Get the guys that are healthy and ready to play. And he should have some more bodies to work with. And then I think once he has a broader vision and they get the new offensive coordinator in, he's a guy that does talk in meetings and he is a guy that is asked for his input and does have good ideas. And I think that's another reason why he's a good addition to the staff. So Tyler, before we turn the page to CJ Carr, do we want to take any questions? Or are we okay with?
Yeah, we got some good questions here, mostly about the coaching staff. John Erickson asked, why would you hire a wide receivers coach and then look for an offensive coordinator?
Well, the offensive coordinator hadn't left yet. And I think whether, you know, you didn't know for sure that Jared Parker was going to get the job, but I think that Marcus would have liked to have Mike Brown on staff. And he also wanted to have somebody on staff before signing day, which he was able to do. I mean, this is a guy that Marcus really felt good about. And in seeing the comments or hearing the comments from the recruits, they seem to be pretty excited about Mike Brown being their position coach. And we're talking about Cam Williams, Logan Sidalte, and Micah Gilbert. Micah Gilbert is playing in one of the All-Star games. What do they call that one tonight that's in Dallas?
I think it's called the U.S. Army Bowl, which it's confusing because what used to be the U.S. Army Bowl isn't the U.S. Army Bowl that's played in San Antonio anymore.
So this one is in Dallas tonight. It's streaming on, I think, Stadium, but you have to go through Fubo, get a free Fubo trial if you want to see the three Notre Dame recruits in that game. But Micah Gilbert is one of the three recruits in that game.
Yeah, I mean, if we just look at the timeline, the Troy job wasn't even open when Notre Dame had already identified Mike Brown as its next wide receivers coach. So, like, it wasn't like Notre Dame knew that Troy was going to hire Jared Parker at that time. And I also, like, I don't think that the next offensive coordinator is going to be like, you know what, I would come to Notre Dame, but I don't want Mike Brown as my wide receivers coach. Like, that doesn't seem like a very likely scenario. Now, maybe that eliminates your possibilities of bringing in a guy who's also a wide receivers coach. I know Jamarcus Shepherd was obviously a name connected to Notre Dame before as the wide receivers coach, probably in the market to be an offensive coordinator, and maybe even at Washington if Washington's offensive coordinator moves on. So I think that they're and I think the other name that comes to everyone's mind is Brian Hartline because of the Ohio State connection, but that I don't that one doesn't necessarily seem to make a lot of sense to me. It's not like the offense lit it up at Ohio State this year in his first time as the offensive coordinator. His experience as an offensive coordinator is lacking there. So I just don't I don't know why you would wait to see if Jared Parker got another job elsewhere or left to hire your wide receivers coach. I think it made sense to move on because Notre Dame was looking for wide receivers in the portal too. Like, how do you recruit portal guys if you don't know what you're you can't say, hey, we're going to have a wide receivers coach here next week, so this is going to be fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
I got some more for us.
Okay.
John Dowling says, if Dylan McCullough doesn't get an interview for the OC position, will he likely look for a promotion elsewhere?
I think Dylan McCullough is going to continuously get offers from the NFL, and he may get some offensive coordinator offers, but I don't think anything in the realm of Notre Dame. He does not have offensive coordinator experience. He is a heck of a recruiter, a heck of a running backs coach. I do think he's a good idea guy, but I think he would be a risk as Notre Dame's offensive coordinator for the same reasons Jared Parker was a risk. No offensive coordinator experience to speak of, and you have a head coach that's a defensive-oriented coach. I just don't think that that would work out.
Yeah, and I think Dylan McCullough is always going to be looking for an opportunity if there's a promotion to do that. He wants to climb the coaching ladder, and so I don't think whether or not he got an interview for the offensive coordinator job at Notre Dame would influence his willingness or want to consider being promoted elsewhere. Rajon asks, who's the next assistant to leave?
I would say the next one, I would say Al Golden, the defensive coordinator. I think he's going to have some attractive offers that he's going to have to make a decision about.
Yeah, I would point to McCullough because of what we mentioned with him wanting to climb the coaching ladder. I think Chris O'Leary would be another guy that I would look at to see if coaches or teams, or whether it's NFL or college, try to swoop in and try to get him. Certainly it would be surprising if he left for another safeties coach job, but if there's a promote at the college level, maybe he would do that for an NFL job. But those would be the two guys that I would be paying attention to. All right. Those are the ones I wanted to get to.
Okay. So CJ Carr is on campus and practicing with the Notre Dame football team. We will get our first look at him tomorrow in a Notre Dame practice red jersey. Maybe he won't have a red jersey. Maybe you can hit him since he's he doesn't formally enroll until January. January 16th is when spring semester classes start. He's able to do this under a special arrangement. He cannot play in the bowl game, but he can practice. Tyler, what is your take on whether this is a good thing for Notre Dame or CJ or both?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the downside of it would be, right? I mean, it's not like he's taking practice reps away from anyone. Notre Dame lost a quarterback in Sam Hartman to an opt-out, so the door is open there. And even if Sam Hartman was going to play in the game, getting CJ Carr acclimated to Notre Dame a little bit earlier seems like a good thing to me. I think he has to. I mean, he knows he's not competing to be the starter for the Sun Bowl. So he's just trying to soak everything in, get some experience under his belt, be more familiar with how Notre Dame does things. And so I think it makes a lot of sense. And other than like him losing out on maybe some time to spend with family around the holidays, I don't know what the personal downside would be for him either.
Right. And he'll get a couple days off. And then Notre Dame, I think, goes down on the 24th or the 25th. For the Sun Bowl game. But again, if he goes down, he'll be going down with Tony the Tiger or by himself. He will not be a member of the team at that point. So, and then Marcus was pretty impressed with what he's seen so far. Do you want to share a little bit of what Marcus And then what we expect to see from him in practice Tuesday morning.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, I don't expect him to be doing much with like guys that will be playing in the Sun Bowl. But I think he's just slinging the ball around. I think it was the word that Marcus Freeman used. He's engaged. He's, I think Marcus Freeman was sort of seeing it through like the eyes of if this was him himself, like would he have been able to do what CJ Carr is doing as a guy in December of his senior year of high school. And I think was pretty impressed by that. And he said he has got a bright future and very excited to see what CJ Carr becomes in Notre Dame. So I tend to agree with that. I think he does have a bright future. I think not next year, not in the 2024 season, but I think the 2025 season it's there for the taking for CJ Carr potentially to become the starting quarterback. If he can, beat out the competition that's there with him, then who can guarantee what that competition will be, considering the quarterback movement that happens on an annual basis. But I think this gives him just a little bit more time to prepare potentially to step up when needed.
Phew, I better step up these topics. We are 51 minutes into this show. So portal reset, Notre Dame adds Riley Leonard, RJ Oben, Mitch Jeter to Chris Mitchell, Bo Collins, and Jordan Clark. So Notre Dame is at six incoming transfers so far that are committed. We had Jamal Banks visiting this past weekend, wide receiver from Wake Forest. Where does Notre Dame stand with him, Tyler?
Yeah, a few folks have asked that question, including Frank Sarah, so I'm glad we got to that. Notre Dame's right in there in the mix. I think Notre Dame would like an answer sooner rather than later, but it's not like the transfer portal is the same recruiting calendar, except for later in early January when there's a different quiet period for guys to take visits that weren't planning to enroll in the middle of the semester or the middle of the year. If Jamal Banks wants in or doesn't want in, it's not like Notre Dame's gonna like go out and pursue a wide receiver to visit this coming Friday, because that's not gonna happen. So this seems to be like Notre Dame's last thing on its to-do list for this current window. In terms of when the guys can visit, I think Notre Dame will probably still be pushing potentially for some other guys to get here in January if there's guys who can transfer mid-year. Notre Dame's in the mix there. He visited Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Purdue. I think he did like a Zoom visit with Michigan. I think there was some thought that maybe he would get to Michigan and not Minnesota, but he did make the visit to Minnesota instead. So that would likely be better news for Minnesota than Michigan, but who knows? This is a different time now. I know he wanted to take some time to figure out what he wants to do. And so we'll see where he ends up choosing.
So for clarification's sake, the portal window closes on January 2nd for underclassmen. That doesn't mean they can't be shopping for homes after January 2nd. You just can't enter your name.
Correct.
Until the springtime if you don't have it in by January 2nd. So the other thing then I wanted to ask you, Tyler, is what position should be prioritized between now and the start of spring semester, which I mentioned is January 16th. So where should ND be shopping for portal additions?
Yeah, I think
I'm really curious one position, what you're going to say.
I think it's wide receiver. Obviously not if Banks commits. I think safety is a spot you continue to look at. And I still think offensive tackle. People want to flog me for continuing to say that, but to me, I know that it's exciting to hear that Charles Jagasai has emerged as the potential starting left tackle for the Sun Bowl, but it's just more evidence that Notre Dame doesn't have faith in Emil Wagner or Tosh Baker to be that starting left tackle. So do they want to go into next season with Charles Jagasai as their starting left tackle? I think if there's a qualified, experienced left tackle starter out in the portal, Notre Dame is going to pursue that, and I believe that will happen and is actively happening. And so it's just a sort of wait and see to who gets in the portal still if Notre Dame can find that connection. So I reported on the Insider Lounge that I'd heard of a name. I'm still not reporting who that is. I know that's not what people want to hear, but the person isn't in the portal yet, so there's not much I can do or say about that. So I think that Notre Dame is looking into that option, and maybe they'll see something in the next couple of weeks, and Charles Chagasaw goes out and kills it in the Sun Bowl, and they're like, you know what, we don't need a left tackle next season. But I think Notre Dame has still, or I know Notre Dame has been actively evaluating that, and I think we'll continue to do so moving forward.
Right. We should add kicker to that mix. And then
you're going to add another kicker to Mitch Jeter? What do you mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I spaced it. I don't know why kicker. I think defensive end and kicker came out of my mouth, but defensive end, they do have numbers there. Do they have the quality at Viper? And Kahano Kia is coming back from his Mormon mission, so that gives you one more defensive end to do that. So with RJ Oben, do we think that defensive end is worth scouring the portal for an elite guy or not necessarily, given Josh Burnham's on the rise, Boubacar Traore's on the rise? Looks like, at least at this point, that Jordan Botello is coming back, and then you have Junior Tuliahamaka and a lot.
Yeah, I mean, guys. I think Notre Dame is in a position to stand pat with where they're at now. I don't think Oben is a Viper for Notre Dame. I think they see him as a strong side or field side defensive end. So that's the plan moving forward. I think that he could do some things there, but I think sort of the outline is sort of similar for what their blueprint is similar to what they did with Javonte Jean-Baptiste, who was better as a pass rusher than a sort of well-rounded defensive end coming into Notre Dame. But the plan is to sort of make him a well-rounded one be able to thrive in that field end position. So I don't see the Viper candidates making sense right now. I think that maybe that's something you revisit later. But maybe there are some guys that are still like considering entering the portal that could change how Notre Dame pursues that position.
From the outgoing standpoint, the latest people to find homes are Aiden Kiana-Aina landing at Cal, Holden Stays, tight end, to Tennessee, Rico Flores Jr., wide receiver, to UCLA. Of the 14 that were outgoing guys, that includes walk-on Skip Velotta, that are still shopping, he's one of them. So are Ramon Henderson, Ryan Barnes, Antonio Carter the second, and Michael Carmody. Do we want to take more questions or go to some Sun Bowl conversation?
I don't see any more questions that we need to answer.
Charles Jagas, to start at left tackle, what's your thoughts about that being not just, oh, wow, he's looking really good in Sun Bowl practice, but he's going to be the starter?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great for him. I already mentioned how, like, it feels like an indictment of Tosh Baker and Emil Wagner as not necessarily being Notre Dame starting left tackles next season. Now, certainly Charles could end up proving to be that. But a guy that we liked in high school but came off of a knee injury and needed some time to recover. I think he was put on a lot of weight even as part of that process, and was even taking some reps inside to start his time at Notre Dame. But left tackle is an important position. They wouldn't put him out there if they didn't think he had a bright future or could handle that responsibility. And certainly, this is kind of what Blake Fisher and Joe Alt had to do in their freshman years. Now this is later on than they had to, but we'll see what he can do. I'm excited to see him because we really haven't seen him do much tackle work at Notre Dame. So we'll see what we can see at practice on Tuesday.
I'll tell you, in the drills that I watched of him in August, he's really difficult to deal with. He has amazing strength for a freshman, former heavyweight Illinois state champion in wrestling, undefeated, did not wrestle his senior year because of the knee injury. In fact, that's how he discovered it wasn't a pull hamstring, it was a PCL tear because he was trying to cut weight and he couldn't get the weight off. I couldn't run enough to get the weight off. And then he said, maybe I should get this checked out. So some other Sun Bowl stuff. No more opt-outs after the recent ones of Joe Alt and Audric Estime. That means J.D. Bertrand and Javonte Jean-Baptiste will play. There's the announced 2024 returns of Riley Mills, Jack Kaiser to go along with the earlier one from Howard Cross the third. All those are huge returns. Getting Xavier Watts back, which is very much a possibility, would be incredible for the defense going into next year and make the new offensive coordinator's job much easier. Oregon State reinstated suspended all Pac-12 running back Damian Martinez. We would expect him to play in the game. There hasn't really been word coming from Oregon State, but we think he's going to play in the game. He rushed for over 1,100 yards this year. And Jelly gets a start at quarterback. We're going to talk to him Tuesday. Kenny Minchie snaps are not prioritized. Kaiser's probably going to play an inside role at linebacker. Wide receivers, sounds like they're getting healthy. I'm trying to run through these quickly so we hit everything.
Yeah, you want to Notre Dame named new captains for the Sun Bowl because they needed them. They're without three of them. Joe Alt, Sam Hartman, and Cam Hart aren't playing in the game, so they named three replacements for those guys to join J.D. Bertrand. Javonte Jean-Baptiste is one of them. D.J. Brown, the safety, is another. And Michael Vinson, the long snapper, is the fourth. Those guys are all very experienced. D.J. Brown is the active leader in games played for Notre Dame with 58. Jean-Baptiste has played more games in college football than anyone else on the roster at 59. And Michael Vinson's been a starter since 2020. So those are guys that are very familiar with college football. Obviously, Jean-Baptiste is a grad transfer from Ohio State, but guys that are definitely well-respected in Notre Dame's locker room. So I think those are all pretty good choices for the Sun Bowl.
Before, if we even go to a lightning round for questions, I do want to work in that Xavier Watts and Joe Alt were unanimous All-Americans. That doesn't happen very often. They are number 31 and 32 in Notre Dame history since there's been four guys that have done it twice. There's 36 actual selections, but 32 human beings that have been named unanimous All-American. And there's there had only been five in the 2000s prior to those two being named unanimous All-Americans. So do we?
I don't see any more questions. I think we're good.
Anything that you want to talk in more about in depth that I ran through super fast?
No, not with the state of my voice. So, but if you want more information, head over to InsideIndySports.com. We are hanging out on the Inside Lounge constantly. That's where our premium subscribers get access to us. If you're not a subscriber to InsideIndySports.com, we have a 30-day free trial available for first-time subscribers. Use the promo code NDYT, which is exclusive to our YouTube audience here. When you sign up, you can get free access to our premium analysis, recruiting coverage, and transfer portal coverage, of course. And now the offensive coordinator search coverage. You can get special access to us on the Inside Lounge, which is where we post all of our information first. There's a link to sign up for that promo in the video description below. We are planning to record our Inside Indy Sports podcast on Thursday again this week. And rather than go live on Christmas or Football Never Sleeps next week, we'll be live on Tuesday. So tune in then. Make sure you subscribe to us here on the channel. Like, comment. We appreciate the audience. We have one of our biggest live audiences to date so far. So thank you for everyone that's tuned in that normally doesn't tune in. I know a lot of the people that were in the chat were some names that I didn't recognize. So I really do appreciate that. So we'll continue that there. Eric, do you want to get a plug in for our sponsor?
Yes. If you live in the Michigan area, these are the kind of days you really appreciate Legacy Heating and Air because it's yucky outside. And if your furnace breaks down, their service is incredible. So Legacy Heating and Air, hit those guys up. Also, if you have really procrastinated your Christmas shopping, we have all kinds of denominations you can get for gift certificates for Inside Indy Sports. You can get 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 100 years if you're really generous.
I don't know if they can do that, Eric. Be careful.
Okay. Well, I know you can get the 1 year deal. So Sign up for that.
Yeah, there's a link. If you go on our homepage, InsideIndieSports.com, there's a banner at the very top that will, if you click the link, it'll take you to where you can sign up to give a gift subscription for the holidays. And we'd appreciate if you consider doing that.
And if you guys could send Tyler some chicken soup, I'd appreciate it so we can have him at full strength this week.
Yeah, I don't know if chicken soup helps me as much as it helps Joe Montana, but hopefully I performed admirably here on Football Never Sleeps.
All right, I think that's going to do it for this week. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you on Tuesday next week, special Tuesday edition because of Christmas.
Yeah, and happy holidays to everyone listening.